Good evening, one and all. Yes, halfway through another week, and I'll tell you what, it's nearly the end of April. Can you believe it? Here we are, what was it, 27th? Yeah, nearly the end of April, and a little bit spring-like weather. It's starting to get that way, isn't it? Well, it is here in Connecticut where I am. I'm going to start off with Shakespeare. Yeah, how about that, eh? It seems to me that men should fear death, seeing that death, a necessary end, will come when it will come. Julius Caesar. Guess what I took at school for my English literature, and I still remember it. But yeah, it's true. I mean, the start when you get to my sort of age and my wife's age, it's funerals we go to, not weddings. It started off this year, started off with I think it was like five funerals in the first month, and yeah, obviously with COVID and stuff like that. Yeah, a lot of people have had loss of people. There's not hardly anybody, I think. It's like 70, 80% of the country have lost somebody they know along the way with it. But what do you do when something happens and something they say should never happen, that you outlive your children? Well, I've been through something like that, and my guest has been through it, and she sort of brought a book out to help you with that sort of thing. And we'll talk about her and her living and how she came to this, because I better introduce her. Because on the show today, I have the one and only Karen V. Johnson. Hi, Karen, how you doing?
Good. Hi, how are you? And thank you for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Now, you're one of these people, you've done quite a few things,
Yeah, maybe a few.
a few along the way. With a federal administrator, Lord Judge, in the military, and this, that, and the other. But like happened, not quite to myself because it was my stepson. When suddenly something happens, and a loved one, especially a younger one, passes for whatever reason, and what do you do with yourself? How can you cope with it? Grieving is something that people just don't understand. I mean, I know sort of my ex-wife, even now, and her son was 22, 23 in the fire service and stuff like that, and he'd had cancer and got through it and everything, and then he was driving his girlfriend home after they'd been to the fire station, and he suddenly died at the steering wheel. He managed, even though he was dead, he still managed to steer the car, avoiding trees and stuff like that. And she, I remember when she phoned me up and told me, I mean, what can you do? What can you say? How can you even imagine somebody like that passing? And there's not a day that it doesn't affect her. It's either the anniversary of this or this and this and this, and it's very hard for people to understand. And yet you've been through it, and now you're hopefully able to share with people who are grieving, just what happened to you, and perhaps you can explain, how you sort of came to this.
I was living my life, and my son, it was struggling like many young men, to find his way, to find his path in life. And I'd gone on vacation and thinking, okay, when I get back home, I'm going to have a talk with him and see what's going on and see how I can help him. And then I get the call that from the detective that he had died, and I'm like, from what? It was a shock, and then a heroin overdose.
Oh, crikey.
What, right? It was just so shocking. And so that just changed everything. It changed my entire world. He and I are very close, and it just opened up a lot of things. Everything is a blessing and a curse. So the hard part was his death and losing him, but the beautiful part is I saw him after he passed. He came to me in sort of his earthly form,
Right.
and so it introduced me to the fact that there really is life after death. And so from that, I developed a spiritual practice, and I've written this book, and it really talks. The book is to help people go through the journey of grief and find how to tap into the energy of grief. We know that other states of being, like marriage and parenthood, have an energy that we can tap into, and
Right.
it's transformational, life-changing. And so is grief. And so in our grieving, if we can tap into the energy of grief, we can work out of that place of despair and being stuck and come out at the other side, being reborn into a new life that honors our loved one. We're not trying to forget them, we're trying to honor them. And so the book has 16 practices, and a lot of the practices that people are familiar with, things like non-judgment, non-suffering, non-attachment, practicing beauty. So these are all practices that we've heard of, but I have people work with them in a ceremonial way, to sit in silence, to light a candle, to have a piece of paper and pen beside you, and write down, who are you judging? Who's judging you? Maybe you're judging yourself. And for non-suffering, what stories are you carrying around in your head? Many of us carry the story, I should have done this, I could have done that,
yes.
I wish I'd done that.
Yes.
Maybe I put him in the wrong nursery school. You know,
right.
I could go way back.
No, it's the blame game, isn't it? Yeah, what did I do
it's
wrong?
It's the blame game.
Yeah.
Yes. And so if you can take all that and write it down and take it to the fire and burn it with the intention of releasing. So we're working a little different level. So this is, a lot of books will tell you, well, you need to go out, you need to go to a movie, or you need to go on a date, or you need to do whatever. But my book is maybe the little precursor to it. It's like a little spiritual release of the places that each one of us is stuck in our grief. And it's something different. Some different little place that really, really has gotten us and kept us stuck. Sometimes it's shame, blame, guilt,
yeah,
all those kind of things. So working through that and taking it to a fire and burning it with the intention of releasing is profoundly releasing.
We've had other people who have written books about the fact, you know, that their children, loved ones, or to have passed and come back. Is it almost as if to sort of realize that, you know, yourselves are suffering more than they are? Just to, we've had people who sort of still communicate with their loved ones over the other side, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Did you find, one of the things I know, you know, with my ex, was that every little thing, you know, like, oh, it would have been so many weeks today, it's so many months today, this would have been this day for him, this would have been this day for him. It's almost like you're looking for things to remind you, and nobody else can understand your grieving. Nobody else knows how it feels. And you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, get out of it, you know, shake yourself. You can't. It's personal. When you do this, like you said, to let it go, you know, by writing what have you on the piece of paper and that, do you find that once you've done that, then that's it on that issue, it's not going to come back again? Or does it still come back occasionally, even though you've, you know, tried to let go with the burning of the paper?
I think you can begin to let go once you see and are aware of the stories that you're carrying inside of you and the judgments that you're carrying inside of you. It's really cathartic to write it down and see them for what they are. And with the intention is so important to release them. And so we can, you know, it's this process of taking this journey so that we can become unstuck and become lighter and awaken and then create a new life. Are holidays still difficult? Yeah, I don't think we have to seek them. It just sort of happens.
You know, New Year. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes. I think, I always say, if I could just fall asleep between Halloween and Valentine's Day.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
I've heard that before.
I could miss
a
lot.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So that's another little bit of how we can look at these days and maybe creatively think of how can we celebrate them and bring some joy into them. So, traditionally culture says we have to be sad, we have to be despondent, but what if we could pray? What if we could make a picnic out of it? What if we could make a celebration of life out of all of it so that we don't have to be stuck in our despair and hopelessness? And so, but it's all that. And it's process of becoming lighter. It doesn't happen all at once, but we can make this journey. And I think once you realize it's a journey, you don't feel that pressure to get over it, move on, let's talk about something else, Let's go to a movie. Let's not talk about that. Our society is not very compassionate about anything that takes too long. Everything is a sound bite. Everything is hurry up, quick. But grief is not that way. It's not something you can deal with on a sound bite. And everybody has their own journey. But just being looking at it as a journey kind of like takes off the pressure. It's like, oh, I don't have it. There's no time frame here. I'm on a journey. I'm taking steps. And if I follow these steps, I can resolve some of this in my mind and my heart.
That's one of the hardest things, I think, is identifying, grief and loss. And then, of course, when you've done that, how to honor a person who's passed, how to honor a loved one. It's you're looking at one side with the identifying, the grief part. And then, what do you do? What can you do to honor that person? Is that something that you go into?
Well, the honoring is always different, and sometimes the honoring really is just allowing yourself to move on with your life. As you said, people see, feel, sense, know their loved ones are around them, and people say, how can that be if they're fully on the other side in heaven or wherever you think they go? How can that be? And I always tell them, well, it's not prison. They can come and go. And so one of the things that my son, I talk with him all the time. He comes back and forth a lot. And eight things spirits on the other side wish you knew. And one of them is that your sadness and despair keeps them from fully engaging on the other side. So as we say stuck and in our hopelessness and despair, we kind of keep them back from doing what they can possibly do on the other side because they have things that they learn, things they do. They grow too as a spirit, and or they resurrect or reincarnate, whatever your belief system is. But our despair and hopelessness keeps them stuck in a way that is not good for either of us. So sometimes the best gift, the best way to honor them, is to create a life out of the ashes of the old, to allow yourself to be able to live and live beautifully. Is the best gift.
In your book, Living Grieving, do you sort of go into not just yourself, but how you can help other people, be it family, co-worker, what have you, sort of supportive steps you can do? Because one of the things I know a lot of people is they just don't know what to do. They just don't know how to help, and they don't want to intrude, and yet they want to help, and it's a very hard part, I'd have thought.
Yeah, it's a little, I do discuss that a little bit. And people come and they don't know what to say. And so people say things like, I think I lost count of how many times people told me he's in a better place. And I wanted to scream and say, well, I'm not in a better place. And I'm kind of angry at him for being in a better place because that's not how it's supposed to happen. So sometimes the best thing people can do is just be there to listen. The people that helped me the most just sat, or they said, how can I help you? What can I do? Do you need gas in the car? Do you need something from the grocery store, from the drugstore? People are very kind. They bring all this food, but my refrigerator was loaded, I mean, with whole cakes and whole casseroles, and it's kind of absurdly ridiculous. And so I always tell people, gosh, bring things to people in containers they can put in the freezer.
No, I can relate to that so well. I mean, there's only so many hot pot or pasta and stuff you can have, but it's like a sticky noodle. I can't eat it all at once.
And people say, well, they should just give it to, a homeless shelter. Well, the people that are grieving are not in that kind of shape. How about you go in and offer to say, how about if I package this up and take it to a homeless shelter? How about if I help you? We can't impose those kind of burdens on people and expectations on people that are grieving. So people who can be compassionate and say, and 10 cakes, I mean, how many cakes can we eat in a, it's not possible, but it's also well-intentioned, but not very practical, really, and not very helpful because that just kind of puts more burden on, like, what am I going to do with all this? And
you
so
get
you're
all
always
that.
feeling,
You get all that. And
yeah,
nobody says, oh, can I get you milk and bread today?
Right.
You know,
right,
which you
exactly.
need. You know, you don't really want to go out to the shops. You don't really want to face, you know, go in a crowd and face all these people. And you get all these
Right.
meals, but, you know, I wouldn't mind some milk so I could have a cup of tea.
Yes, right. Or the tea, you know, all of that. So, you know, it's those kind of things too. And so watch what you say. And then people would say, everything's going to be okay. And I thought, nope. No, nothing's ever going to be okay. So, you know, it's all those things that people
never,
try
never
to say,
be,
don't know
never
what
going
to
to be
say.
The same again. This is the thing.
Never going to be okay.
No.
Yeah. So we, you know, if you think about what would you want to hear when you're sitting there, maybe you would not want to hear anything. Maybe it's just okay to sit.
The fact when you know, your son comes to you, is it because he's, you know, how can I put this? Is there a sense of guilt that you have that he's there to help with?
I think in the beginning, he definitely was around me to help. I was so in such bad shape and grieving so hard. And I know that he was there frantically trying to communicate with me and I couldn't hear him. I could sense him. So I went to a medium who told me some of the things he was saying, which sounded just like him. And so, but now these days, I developed a spiritual practice. I do shamanic energy healing.
Oh, okay.
And my son actually comes back and forth and he helps me with these practices and helps me with clients. And so now it's a much different relationship. And because I have created a new life out of the ashes of the old. I'm not a federal judge anymore. I'm not
right.
in Washington, D.C. I live in a beautiful place on a lake and I do shamanic energy healing and I'm perfectly happy and found things, spiritual practice that I certainly would not have found but for him. And so I feel like he's led me along the way. So that can be the upside of it. If you allow death to be the doorway into a different life, into a different way of being, into spirituality, death does not have to be the end of everything. It can be new beginnings as well.
And that's very much, you know, if you look at ancient approaches to sort of death and grief and stuff like that, it was totally different.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was totally different. And in fact, more than likely, it was, you know, more correct to how it should be than what it is now. Is that something, you know, because obviously with your shamanic practices and you've looked into the past sort of ways like that, is that something you've sort of come to understand as well?
Yeah, so Greg Braden has a great book out. It's called The Wisdom Codes. And there were actually meditations or mantras that people would say, and there's three different ones that have to do with grief and loss, to help the person move this energy through them, to help people see it in a different way, to help them see the other side of grief and loss. And so, yeah, ancient people understood it's neurolinguistics. So the linguistics and the spoken word and the vibration of the chanting really help people to be able to move grief. And we've kind of lost those ways.
Right.
But they're beautifully in that book, Greg Braden's book. And it's something we can tap into and realize that, yes, this is not a novel idea, but yes, we can use this energy of grief and we can move some of that stuckness out of our hearts.
I mean,
and out of our lives.
One of the things, you know, on this journey, which basically bereavement is, is you end up with a sort of guilt, despair, etc. But you've got to have a bit of compassion yourself. You know, you've got to sort of look at yourself and say, you know, well, yeah, this is me. Instead of sort of the guilt and despair and everything, have some compassion. Is this something you've come across?
Yeah, I think we lose it. You know, when someone near us dies or we are caretaker or we've got someone whose child is in the throes of addiction, we lose our way. And so we forget to practice beauty. I always talk about the practice of beauty. And I ask people to put a note on their refrigerator. Practice beauty. One thing every day. What can you do? One small thing that makes you happy. One small thing that reconnects you to things that used to make you happy. And as we get in the practice of doing something that makes us happy and experiencing that, we're digging new neural networks in our brain. Because when we keep going over the same things, the ruminating, the guilt, the shame, blame, guilt, we're digging that deeper and deeper and deeper into our brains. And so we want to switch it. We want to think about beauty. What's one thing that I could do? One thing that my loved one used to do? One thing that we used to do together? How can I transform it and get back in touch with beauty instead of focusing entirely on despair, shame, blame, guilt, and all that?
Yeah, very, very true, very true. One of the things you mentioned was the shamanic practices. Has that helped you heal the sort of wounds a bit and, get over some of this grief?
Oh, yeah. So, in shamanic practice, that's what we do. We help people to release heavy, stuck energies and bring in the light, bring in divine light. So we're, the universe, I think it was Aristotle that said the universe abhors a vacuum. And so we don't want to have a vacuum. We want to release old, stale, dark, stuck energy and bring in the light. And that's the shamanic way of healing. That's what we do.
Now, the book's been out, I think it was July last year, sort of came out or something.
Yeah.
What sort of response have you received?
Oh, my gosh. It's been kind of overwhelming. I've been winning. I've got a magazine here, and I've won some awards. And,
oh, great.
One some are going to be announced. It has, but I can't tell you which one it is until it's announced officially. But
there you go. No problem. As long as it's not a knighthood, because I'm still waiting for mine. No, that's great. People sort of, I guess you've received sort of messages from people saying how much you've helped them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've got a lot of people through my website. I do a lot of healing work. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. So I got a Book Life review. And so lots of awards, lots of things coming in, lots of shows. And it's been amazing and it's been wonderful. And I feel so lucky that I can reach more people and help more people. So,
does your son want you to do that? Because that's what we found before with some people I've talked on the show is it's almost like they're there to help you, but hoping that you'll pass it on. Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I feel like he's been with me every step of the way and he's been helping me and guiding me in this path that I it was a completely different path than I was on before. And sometimes if we can touch into death in that way, and we can reconnect with life. And that's what it's really about. Death can teach us a lot about living and life.
Indeed.
And that's what I want to help people with, is to see death as a doorway into a bigger and better and more compassionate life that honors their loved one. That's what we do to honor them, is to live.
Right.
And live well.
Yeah, I mean, some people honor him. Yeah, I'll have a great big, a nice tombstone and, in the grave. And I'll take flowers there, every other week and stuff like that. It's not that sort of honoring. Yes, that's nice. But it's within yourself, within what you do, and how you can share with other people, I'm guessing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, because there's so many people, as you were talking about in the beginning, who are suffering. They've lost so many losses due to COVID and overdoses and fentanyl and, oh my goodness, loss of our way of life and change in the world situation. And so many people are living and feeling grief and loss of so many different kinds. And so, and some people multiple loss, old grief, unresolved grief from the past. So many people have grief stuck in them. And we know that when we're our bodies are under a lot of stress and we're holding a lot of grief, we're much more susceptible to autoimmune diseases and all kinds of other diseases, because our body holds and stores that heaviness, and it's got to come out in some way. And if we can't find a way to release it, it just becomes dis-ease, dis and ease, disease, dis-ease in our bodies.
Right. And that's another thing that happens is people just keep it bottled up.
Yes.
And they don't necessarily, release perhaps is the wrong word, but they don't identify it. They don't share it. They don't try and explain it or talk about it or get through it. They keep it bottled up and bottled up. And people just think, oh, yeah, they're not showing any emotion, but inside they're actually being torn apart. And that's the sort of opposite, if you like, to what we've been talking about. And there are people like that.
Well, yeah, because people are very unsympathetic to people who grieve. There's no right way to grieve. You can't win. So if you don't grieve long enough, they say, "Wow, she seemed to get over that really quick." And if you grieve too long, "Oh, she's really suffering. She probably needs to see a doctor." So you can't win. So and after a while, when you realize that you're making people uncomfortable with your grief, you tend to go within and become self-isolated and alone and lonely, right? And so there really isn't a really good outlet for people that are grieving. And so that's really why I wanted to write the book, is to find a way to help people to express, even if we're just expressing in a ceremonial way. What better? Who will listen more than the divine, than
Exactly.
spirit, than God,
Yeah,
right?
indeed.
And so, and listen to our prayers, listen to our heartfelt, and listen to asking to release our judgments, of release our suffering, release our attachments, so that we can re-engage with life in a beautiful way, in a way that can help our loved ones and help people around us to see there is a different way. We don't have to just conform with societal beliefs and expectations about how our grief is supposed to look.
Right.
We can
Well,
create our own map.
we've been learning about this map from you and hopefully helping a lot of people along the way during the show. But time is running out, so what I'm going to do now is actually hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and, of course, your book.
Oh, yes. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. My book is called Living Grieving, Using Energy Medicine to Alchemize Grief and Loss. And you can find it on Amazon. You can also find me on my website, karenjohnson.net. And if you give us your email address, you'll get a newsletter once a month and find out about different classes I'm having. And there's also a link to my books and all the services that I provide.
That's great. Well, Karen, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. I'm sure
Thank you for having
your book will
me.
continue to be very helpful to a lot of people. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. My guest today, Karen V. Johnson. We've been talking about her book. Very interesting, and as I say, a lot of people, including myself, can relate to this. Living Grieving, Using Energy Medicine to Alchemize Grief and Loss. Really good book. Help a lot of people, I'm sure, out there, especially with what's happened the last 2 or 3 years. Anyway, that's it. I'll be back with the two new authors next Tuesday and Wednesday. Of course, before that, on Sunday between 5 and 6 p.m. Eastern, we have Those Were the Days, music from the 20th century. And I think it's the second show with a theme of money, if I remember right. But it's like 256 shows, so the themes just keep coming along. And then after that, of course, between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern, we have the Swinging 60s, music from the 60s from around the world. And then, as I said, next week, next Tuesday and Wednesday, we're back with the book and a chat. Until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.
Blow away the cobwebs and stop yawning. A little cup and sorcery is magic in our morning. In the afternoon or in the evening too. Cheese up, pour yourself a cup. Tickety boo. That nice on a cup of tea that makes you feel good twice. One love for two, jiggity boo.